Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi everyone, it's Juno. Before we start this week's episode of So I Got to Thinking, we just wanted to send the friends and family of Willie Garson, who played Stanford Blatch in Sex and the City, our deepest condolences. Like all queer people, Stanford Blatch was one of our absolute favourite representations of a gay man on television, and he meant so much to so many people, not least Sarah Jessica Parker and the rest of the cast and crew. Sending all our best wishes from So I Got to Thinking.
Hello there and welcome to So I Got to Thinking, the weekly Sex and the City podcast where we take the timeless questions of Carrie Bradshaw and apply them to modern life and love. As ever, you are listening to Juno Dawson and Dylan B. Jones, and this week we're joined by a very special guest, my friend and senior diversity and inclusion consultant, it's Lang Montgomery. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
You are welcome anytime. This week, we are discussing Season 4, Episode 10, Bells of the Balls. And listener, I think this one's going to be spicy. But before I start ranting, I was just saying to Lang, I'm about 7 days away from my anti-androgen injection. So this is when you catch me at my angriest in my hormonal cycle. So before I start frothing, Dylan, do you want to open your potted synopsis?
Absolutely, yeah, as always. So the theme for this week is, balls. As you know, Sex and the City. Mm. We're not really surprised by that straight off the bat. So Steve is struggling with the fact that he has lost a testicle because of testicular cancer. And that leads to some interesting conversations around masculinity and how cis men see themselves, but it's also obviously relatable to the modern day, and it's very dodgy issues are raised by Carrie, very dodgy things are said by Carrie about how like having testicles relate to masculinity and just generally like strange things afoot in Carrie's narration this week, more than usual. Samantha, quite an interesting storyline for Samantha this week.
We meet Richard. So Richard is going to be a fixture for a while. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had forgotten that this is where we first meet Richard.
Yeah. I didn't realize it was this early.
Me too.
He popped up and I was like, oh, so yeah, Richard Wright, hotelier. She applies for a job at his, hotel chain, I guess. Is it? Mm-hmm. And Charlotte and Trey. Yeah. Continuing Charlotte and Trey's storyline, which has been kind of the same thing for the last 6 weeks, but so they're still trying to have a baby, basically.
Yeah, and naturally, if you are a couple attempting or undergoing fertility treatment, it is grueling. So maybe it is right that we are experiencing a grueling fertility treatment with Trey and Charlotte.
Yeah. Oh, and then Carrie, big. Goes to the cabin in the woods.
Yes.
And encounters Aidan, yeah. Yeah.
The cabin in the woods is back. I kind of hoped we'd seen the last of it, but alas, we're back in Suffern.
There were no squirrels in cute outfits.
No, the squirrel did not return after last week.
We messaged the squirrel on Instagram actually to see if it would be a guest on the podcast, but we did not get a reply.
We did not. Here we go. Testicles. Which is interesting because normally we would start with Carrie. However, I think in order to fully understand everything that we're going to be talking about this week, we kind of need to start off with Steve. Because it is Steve who leads us to Carrie's question, which is this week, are men just women with balls? Now, we find ourselves swiftly in Trans Corner with this one. And that's right. This episode, we will be no doubt spending some time in Trans Corner. So brace yourselves, kids. We're getting into it. We are getting into it. But first of all, let's talk about Steve. So as detailed last week, he has lost one testicle to testicular cancer. I believe we would be calling it a partial orchiectomy.
Oh.
I think. He is considering having a testicular implant, which apparently in 2001, when this episode went out, was considered experimental treatment. I would think now that having any sort of implant is quite de rigueur, really, like Brazilian butt lifts and bum implants and cheek implants and chin implants. You can get implants anywhere. So I'm guessing that nowadays Steve could have probably got himself a prosthesis relatively easily, I would have thought. But what's more problematic than his a pinto near his penis, as Miranda puts it, what's more problematic than the pinto is the questions it opens up about masculinity, and this question ricochets around all of their lives. So we've got Aiden feeling threatened because Big resurfaces. We've got Samantha having to prove her masculinity in a very male workplace. Steve feels like less of a man, so Miranda gives him a mercy fuck. And we all know how that turns out for Miranda. So Ian, what do we think, Lang? Balls and masculinity.
Well, it's when I was watching it, rewatching it actually, I was just sort of giggling to myself in certain parts because all these questions around balls that were coming up and just this whole constructed idea of, well, you know, it's this less than thing all the time. And also I think this pressure for a perfect body in a lot of ways, or this idea of how a body's meant to be. And I suppose being trans, I'm very comfortable with the fact that I don't have a perfect archetype body. In order to masculinize further for myself, you know, and actually 2 weeks ago I celebrated my 12th birthday. So
we should say Leng is not 12.
No.
However,
You know, notice is that all the conversations I've ever had or I didn't expect before transitioning was that I'd spend the rest of my life sort of defending or talking about genitalia somewhere along the line and just this interest in things, because I know that I pass quite well in a masculine way. So sometimes people have shown surprise, and I wish I'd patented what I call the triple stare. Because sometimes when I tell people that I'm trans, it's almost like the music, there's a pause, and then there's like this music from Jaws that starts playing through my mind. So I just watch what people are doing. And then the triple stare starts, and people can't help it, but literally their eyes meet my face, chest, groin, and it moves in this sort of movement. I mean, it's the thing with COVID is, at least with Zoom, it only gets to like here now. So I don't know what else they're doing, and probably everyone else is in their pajamas as well. But it's kind of like, well, it's a really weird thing that happens, or people have said, well, do you have balls, or do you have this? Or I've even had people patting in my groin area to check what's there as well, which, you know, I don't know what they're expecting.
Wow.
You know,
sort of. That's sexual assault.
But when I was told to man up and I should be able to take it, apparently, or I should be a bit less sensitive about such things. I mean, I'm sorry, but if ugly people pat me there, I'm not going to be very happy about it, you know, and also it's unconsensual, you know.
But, yeah, my gosh.
You know, but it is a weird thing. And in other situations, I'm like, well, what do people expect? Do they want, like, you know, do they expect, like, Katy Perry's firework video or something, all these things to come flying out?
Boom, boom, boom. Even brighter than the moon. Oh my god.
And it's just very interesting that, you know, but then also when I've been in other medical situations, actually conversations about balls have come up. And, you know, sometimes if I'm being factually true with people, you know, sometimes it does sound like I'm just trolling them mercilessly, where I'll say, well, you know, I'll say, well, I have got balls, but they're ovaries. And people look at me like, gone out, they're like, what, ovaries? And actually, really, alpha males, they hate the word ovaries, I've found. They get really scared by it. So it's actually quite good fun to sort of say it. And because I've worked in different corporate environments doing diversity, inclusion and equity work, it's been quite fun, actually. I call it blue suit chicken, where sometimes with them, I'll be like, say a word that they'll be like, yeah, look at me, you know, I'm all powerful, I've got this. And I was like, ovaries, and they're like, you know. And if you say like menopause or vagina, that also makes them run a mile as well. So it's quite good fun, and it often gets you moved on a bit quicker in a room as well. But, or it's just the surprise. But I think really with the balls thing, I was just like, wow, because it seemed that everyone's so fixated on it. Or, you know, does, and I'm gonna sound like I'm making one of Carrie's, you know, first sentences that she never finishes, but, you know, I'm just like, well, you know, what is it that makes you a man? You know, like dot, dot, dot at the end, you know, and you sort of find yourself thinking, well, what is this? But I have found it quite fascinating in terms of why people deduce things based on that, or to see that you're less than just because you've got, you know, one of that. Or when people say, oh, he's only got one ball and stuff, like, you know, like, what does that actually mean? Because, you know, you could still have children. And also quite a lot of people, some people say that I've spoken with that have been talking about dating preferences, sometimes they've said, well, I hate big balls, or I'm not really into balls. So sometimes I'm like, why is there this fixation on that?
Because, I mean, this is weirdly timely. So for the first time in a long time on So I Got to Thinking, we are recording almost at the same time that we're going live.
Yeah.
This is that Dylan and Aine series one, we started off so organized, like where we recorded 12 episodes in advance and like got them all ready. Now we're just like, oh shit, we haven't done next week's episode.
I mean, it might be something to do with the fact that we're no longer in lockdown with nothing to do other than,
well, there is that. And also, it's, do you know, it kind of helps because actually we can react to what's going on the set and just like that as well.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily a bad thing. But this episode now, I mean, actually what's maybe more depressing is that possibly any week that we have ever recorded this podcast, there is probably some bullshit on social media about trans people and their genitals. However, it does feel weirdly prescient that this episode has come around on the same week that our health secretary Sajid Javid has said that, you know, to pretend that men have a cervix is like a flagrant disregard of biology. And at the same time, you know, we have Rosie Duffield MP. So this is a cross-party issue. You've got Rosie Duffield from the Labour Party also banging on about, you know, men can't have cervixes. And it does feel like this is the time on this podcast. You know, we've been recording this podcast for nearly 2 years now, where I think it is time to address the cis fascination with trans genitals, because maybe it's part of a bigger problem that we put way too much emphasis on genitals full stop, which is very evident in this episode where, you know, Steve is attaching a lot of his masculinity to the fact he only has one testicle now. Or Samantha is making statements around her gender because she has no balls, you know. What do we think? Is the world just genital obsessed? And where has this obsession come from, Dylan?
I think, well, I was thinking, preparing my answer, thinking what I was going to say when you'd finished, was gay men are certainly guilty of being obsessed with genitals, like send a dick pic. is sometimes the first message you get on Grindr.
Can you explain that to me? Because I've seen the odd one or two.
Yeah.
And they do just look like a little meaty pipe.
Do you know what? I never understood the appeal of it just out of context.
Right?
Without like a person. The same applies to porn as well. Like when porn is really close focused in on just the dick, like the dick going in the arse. It's just like, what's... It's 8 p.m. on a Monday. It's like, I don't understand what you get from that. Like, if you can't see facial expressions, if you can't see, if you have no idea what the person's like, or like, why is that the only thing that you're focused on? It's really bizarre. And I wonder why we're taught about, I wonder why we're obsessed with it. Maybe because genitals, as kids, we're taught that genitals are like dirty and you shouldn't talk about them. Maybe if it was a bit more, if things were a bit more open, we'd be less obsessed, ironically.
What do you think, Lang?
Well, I think it's just really interesting that, you know, it's like dick is seen as good all the time. Or, you know, it's like this sort of like, or it's fun, or it's like, yeah. The minute you say vagina, people get really weird about it. Or the thing about cervix is like, it's funny because I made a comment to a colleague earlier on, actually, with some of the stuff that in relation to what Sajid Javid just said, you know, and I just sort of said, I'm fed up of every time I open social media sometimes of seeing this, because sometimes I have found myself thinking, well, do I actually have the energy to respond to some of this? Because in some situations, as an activist and as a proud member of the trans community and someone that's visible, yes, in times I like to say, you're talking a load of crap, basically, all of you. Or, you know, sometimes I don't want to be like, well, actually, I have one, you know, sort of all the time. But sometimes I'm just like, oh, for fuck's sake, you know, like it would just be nice to not have to always defend that point or, you know, do that. And also working in the type of work that I do, I'm always trying to dispel myths, barriers, biases, all that stuff. So part of me goes into sort of half work mode, half just like, and, you know, why are we still having this conversation? And also, why is there this obsession? Because it is an obsession, it feels like. And, you know, or when people say to me sometimes, have you fully transitioned, i.e. they're asking about genitalia every time, or have you had everything done? And to Dylan's point about dating apps, the funny thing happened in an office I was in once. It was quite hilarious, actually, because it was obviously sort of work I do means that I often sit amongst HR, so it's very female-based. And usually in corporate, this is when I was working in-house anyway, so in corporate settings, typically it's mostly a lot of straight white females that work there, and the only men that are there tend to be gay or LGBT, or we're a bit more of a minority, let's say. And so obviously being one of two men on a floor once, it was, we overheard the usual people having their usual chats about Love Island or their holidays in Dubai, which they seemed to like, and wondered why we felt quite excluded.
That was me.
Or didn't want to be part of that.
That was just me talking behind you. Hi guys.
but then we realized that we kind of outed ourselves without meaning to once, because it was really funny, because at one point one of them had like gathered a load of mouth and was going on about Tinder, and you know, me and this colleague, we thought, we rolled our eyes, we were like, oh, God's sake, you know, what's next? And the best bit, someone was like, you're not going to believe what happened last night. And they were like, what? And they were like, this guy I was talking to, he sent a dick pic, and they were all like, ooh. And anyway, me and this other guy, we just turned, we're like, what's wrong with that? And then we were like, whoops, we were like, wrong app. And then we just literally had that moment.
Outed yourselves. Although I think dick pics are quite ubiquitous now. I think we've almost moved into a new phase whereby the unsolicited dick pic is now being treated like indecent exposure. And I think it's a complicated one, because I think this is something that I've heard a lot of straight cis women talking about, which is being bombarded with dick pics on things like Instagram, which isn't even a dating app, first and foremost, you know. So I think it's somewhat different for a cis straight woman to be receiving dick pics on Instagram than it is to enter a space like Grindr. But exactly. That said, going on Grindr shouldn't be consent. You know, logging onto Grindr is not consent to see someone's dick.
No, or it's just funny where you don't get any other conversation, or, you know, sometimes people don't say anything else, or it's just there, and you're just like, well, Okay.
I always think of that whenever I get an unsolicited one. I always think of that scene in Bridesmaids, which is like hilarious, where they're like, where Kristen Wiig's like reenacting how an erect dick, and she just sort of goes like that. It's just like that's the noise in my head when I get an unsolicited dick pic. I do not understand the motivation behind sending them.
No,
aggressively ask you for pictures as well, you know, it's like they'll sort of, so all those people that for some reason I'm just like, I'm kind of perturbed and sort of curious at the same time, the people that will send you like loads in one go, and you're just like, wow, you know,
from different angles.
Like, yeah, it's like, hi, here's my catalogue, boom. You know,
like, they've got them all like stored, like, and they all come through at the same time as well, don't they?
Dylan, you might be too famous to be sending dick pics now.
Yes,
it's maybe. You know, we have a lot of listeners now. You might have reached the place where you just can't do it anymore, because somebody might be like, you know, that guy from So I Got to Thinking.
Or maybe the ultimate will be, unlike the time when Charlotte repurposed all of her unused wedding pictures on jugs, maybe it will be like Dylan's face will appear on everything.
Oh, that'll be so nice. Oh, well, actually, I love that scene in this episode where Jugs reappears. Jugs is back. Look at her. She has big boobies.
Oh, that was very sweet of Charlotte, I thought. Mm-hmm. Very sweet.
Again, I look at situations like that and I'm just like, I don't get the breast thing. So I'm just like, I got rid of mine. So I'm just like, you know, I just find myself. So I'm one of, you know, so in certain situations, like one person said to me, I know you're gay. And I was like, well, actually, I'm bi. They didn't know. And I was like, what makes you say that? So you're one of the few men, when you talk at me, you look at my eyes, not anything else. And I was just like, wow. But again, that was really interesting, you know, in terms of how people, you know, are clearly interacting, or what people think is their normal way of interacting with someone in a conversation. And it, you know, I was just like, wow, you know. And also part of me, I was a bit drunk at the time, so I was like, well, so I chopped mine off, so it doesn't really bother me. And then weirdly they didn't want to talk to me anymore, and I can't think why, but there we go.
I wonder if, now this is how I know, and this is how I can reach out to Steve and say to him, no one is going to give two shits about your testicles, for the very simple reason of the existence of trans men. Now, I describe myself broadly as queer, but I have always slept with men because I'm sexually attracted to men. Big spoiler there after 100 episodes of this podcast. And that very much included trans men. And so that's how I knew that what I was attracted to was not genitals, because otherwise I wouldn't have been attracted to trans men. And I sometimes wonder if that is part of the issue with transphobic people, which is that they don't quite know what to do with us sexually, that they see trans men or trans women, and we present some kind of conundrum to their desire. And I sometimes wonder if that's a little bit of a part of the problem, if I'm honest.
I think you're right there. Because sometimes, you know, I've had conversations with lesbians who to me have been like, well, you know, they're like, well, I don't like men, but you're different. And I'm like, all right, because of the, you know, you want to know what I've got down there, or what I don't have there thing. Or in other situations, it's like, well, because you're not, or I was told once, you're not 100% male, so because of that, you know, that's why I can be attracted to you. And I was a bit like, thanks. You know, it's like these lovely statements you get told, which are dressed up as a compliment when they're not, you know. But it is interesting, that kind of, and I think it is disruptive to people. Or, you know, again, on certain apps, I have had people say, I've never had a trans before, has been a nice line there, which I'm like, wow, it's a nice opening chat up line, you know, sort of. Or, you know, and I think we do symbolize or represent some sort of curiosity to people, and also it creates this conundrum for people, because I think, to your point, they're definitely people have this like, oh my goodness, well, I am attracted to you, but what does this, people always bring it back to themselves. So sometimes, you know, I slept with someone years ago that they said, I really enjoyed it and stuff, and I know you're, it was a gay man, and he sort of like, he's like, but now I'm questioning myself, like, what does this mean about my sexuality or who I am, and I could never tell my friends about it. And, you know, and I was just like, well, you know, and I thought, wow, that's a really interesting view on things. And again, I've even noted this from, even when I get messages sometimes, It's interesting the times that people want to engage with me, and it's normally at a time when they're quite drunk or they might be in another inebriated state, because I know that I will be fulfilling a dirty little secret kind of box. That's what all the exotic shag or bucket list of, you know, wild sexual encounters of whatever. You know, and I know that that's what's going on. And
that is such a flashback. That was like all my early dating years when I came out was all, I've always wanted to sleep with a trans woman. And you're kind of like, what's in it for me? Like, my sexual desire is not, I've always wanted to sleep with somebody who always wants to sleep with a trans woman. You know, that is not my fetish. Said nobody ever. Like, foie. I'm really attracted to men who creep around after trans women on the internet. Foie.
And also who don't get out much. It's interesting. I've noticed I imagine you might have noticed this as well, Lang. An interesting shift in the last few years with gay men and sleeping with trans men, and also and being very open to it, but that also is straying into fetishization a little bit as well. And it's interesting, like there's a few like trans porn stars now, who trans male porn stars. I know there was Buck Angel,
problematic.
Oh, is he? Oh, okay. But yeah,
that was some nodding there. Yes,
it seems to be becoming more a little bit more visible, but I guess more as a result perhaps also more fetishized. I don't know. Yeah,
well, it definitely is, because when I first transitioned, I was living in San Francisco at the time. Yeah. And hilariously, I'd volunteered in this queer art gallery because I'd had an internship.
God, that's Sussex
that
in the City. That's very Sussex in the City.
Well, it's very tells us it, but it turned out it was run by a queer porn star. So I got to meet lots of people in there. And some of the people that I think are visible now were people that just before they transitioned or they just started. And so I met a lot of people that were sort of connected to that. And it was really interesting how it's perceived more over there. But over here, it was just very, very different. And, you know, sort of in a certain queer space, there'd be the odd person that I knew of that was trans. It's become more visible now in some ways. But it's also interesting how, particularly on more lesbian fringe scenes for trans masculinity anyway, like how you're either accepted or not.
Right.
And you are expected to take a bit of a backseat, or people, there is still a bit of an assumption on privilege. And yes, I definitely have privileges. I'm not disputing that for one second. But it's really interesting when you navigate spaces as a trans male sometimes, how this sort of instant privilege is kind of branded on you. So you spend your life socialized in a female identity and you're told to shut the fuck up, back off, you know, make yourself small. And then when you say, hey, I'm a trans guy, people are like, well, you've got all this privilege, so you know, you're taking up this space. And you know, and if you know, and on the one aspect you get people jostling you, and if you don't do anything you're considered really soft, if you do anything you're being really aggressive and problematic. So it's kind of a weird like double fuck you basically.
This brings us really neatly back to the issue at hand, which is what makes men masculine. And according to this episode, it's those things that you just mentioned. It's aggression, you know, it's, you know, Aiden and Big having a willy waggling contest down in Suffern.
I was very disappointed in Samantha when she said, I wrote it down, when she said, men don't talk, they fight. That's just what they're like. A bit of toxic masculinity from Samantha there.
This episode is drowning in toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
And the women characters do very little to challenge those very outdated stereotypes around what makes men.
Miranda kind of does, but I also think she kind of, I was a bit annoyed at her as well, kind of when she made fun of, not made fun of Steve, but kind of like immediately slapped Steve down when he suggested like getting a prosthetic testicle. I was kind of like, well, if he wants to do that, Miranda, like, you might think it's silly, but if it makes him feel better, like, let him do it. And in the end, she did go to the like to the clinic with him.
But, I did love it when she dropped the ball.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
it was the blowing the fluff off it that did it for me.
I also really enjoyed Samantha saying just one little ball.
And then, but she did make the very, there was a key phrase, because I took note of that, because that moment, and I thought that's happened to so many other people, where it's like when she was sort of called out on it, it was interesting that people were just like, oh, I wasn't thinking. And I was like, yeah, that's the thing. You know, it's like people that just, they make that flyaway comment that could make someone feel, and especially when you can see in a situation that someone's clearly not comfortable, but they keep going and going and going. And in some situations on accountability, I think, well, you know, unless someone really points it out to someone, they will just keep going. And it can be really unbearable at times. But the main thing that I zeroed in on, this is probably because of the work I do again, that I found really fascinating about that whole episode, was when they were talking about the crying at work, but the being emotional, because the reason why that has a wider context was, if you make it more intersectional in some ways, the thing that I've noticed, so I run a lot of focus groups where I talk a lot of people at all different levels of business, etc. And the thing about the crying at work or being perceived as emotional, which is seen as a more feminine trait. So in terms of this gender binary as well, which I think really does play out, and it shows that I think patriarchy is hurting us all, because it's like you either have to be hyper masculine, hyper feminine. So you've got to have big balls, you've got to be all these horrible, gross stereotypes. But interestingly, like women, but also people of colour, particularly like black women, but also anyone that's LGBT, particularly in the workplace, the minute you assert yourself, or, you know, you're just basically not being white, heteronormative, you're seen as emotional, and therefore you're a problem, and you're all of these other things, and therefore you are discriminated against more. You do have to actually work twice as hard. So that's one thing that I found, that when that conversation was emerging, again, my little sort of radar, I was like, that's really interesting that... you know, sort of what they were talking about, because those everyday microaggressions that happen are designed to, in effect, keep a certain strata that's in place, which explains why in wider role models and job markets, even when lots of companies love to talk about people bringing their whole selves to work, then you look at their boards and actually it looks like the Alps, you know what I mean? It's like, that's the representation that you're looking at. And because it's expected behaviours, and some of the women in those corporate circles are like the Samanthas, that perhaps the ones that have to, in effect, emulate sort of like really aggressive male behavior sometimes in order to be seen as strong. And it's really interesting, the whole concept of being strong is seen as this sort of virile, or you've got big balls, you've got this, you've got all that sort of stuff. And I had a mentor a few years ago that was even like, well, Leng, you know, you are quite a soft guy sometimes, and that's great on some ways, but you know, if you want to get ahead, you're going to have to do this. And I said no, because, you know, I grew up with no male stereotypes at all. In fact, if I was asked controversially for a lot of my life, I didn't actually like men very much. So, but
so
I
you
knew
became
that I
the
one,
man you wanted know. To be.
But I also just thought, well, if we're going to challenge gender stereotypes in society, well, we have to actually be our own people and have the boldness to do that. And that means that, you know, do I want to be a big stereotype just because that's what everyone else wants me to be? No, because that's fake. And that's, you know, I'm not living any more of my life that's a lie, basically. So I'm not going to adopt other behaviours and things that make me not who I am.
Okay, let's take a little break there, mostly because I've been speaking into the wrong microphone.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello, and welcome back to So I Got to Thinking. This week, we're talking about Belles of the Balls with our special guest, Leng Montgomery. So before the break, we did start to tap into a very particular kind of masculinity, which is sort of corporate masculinity. So let's drift over from Steve and his testicle. Let's talk about Samantha and Richard. I can't say I'm the biggest Richard Wright fan, but I think mainly because I don't fancy him. So there, I said it. Because I don't personally find, I'm sure James Remar is a wonderful man, but I don't particularly fancy him. So I never really got the whole Samantha and Richard thing.
I think he plays that character well, like that sort of snaky corporate character. And I really liked this scene as well. I liked it when he was like looking at her, and also slightly identified with it as well. When he was looking at her CV and he was like, this is all just parties.
was that triggering? Has that happened to you, Dylan?
And I also found it really quite touching when she's like, and, you know, because of the reasons that we touched on just before the break, I found it quite touching when she was running to the lift, like, please don't cry, please don't cry. And then the lift doors close and she like lets herself go. I thought it was quite an emotive scene, I guess, because Samantha's always so strong.
But I just wish she'd told him to fuck off.
Yeah.
From that very first job interview where he's all like, you could work with a man, your CV is all parties. And she kind of has to enter into this weird sparring contest where, like Leng said before the break, she has to get on his level when really she should be telling him to get on her level.
When he judges her for sleeping with his architect and was saying, well, you know, she has to think about the impacts, implications of on her career. And I was like, oh, so why is it again? You are lauded as, you know, you could be shagging your secretary and God knows who else, you know, but you're lauded as a hero in that setting. But, you know, God forbid a woman that, you know, has had a shag. Why is this being held against her?
A great line as well, which I wrote down, was when she says, what does he think I'm going to do? Get my period and ruin his empire? I thought that was an amazing line.
Rosie Duffield MP, no one in the world is denying that the vast majority of people who have a period in the workplace identify as women. But the fact is, there are some trans men and non-binary people who might also have a period in the workplace, and we're just all asking to be included in the conversation.
We all have bodies that do things.
Yeah. I mean, mine right now is a little bit leaky because I think I have some kind of food poisoning.
Well, I love deal with calling that. Myself a hormonal hot mess in front of my colleagues sometimes, you know, sort of.
Yeah, oh my gosh. One of my favourite people at the moment, and I wonder if they listen to the podcast, I'm really obsessed with this trans woman on Instagram who is like a really vocal anti-vaxxer because, you know, she doesn't know what's in the vaccine. And I'm like, babes, you're transgender. You are full of synthetic estrogen. I think the horse has fucking bolted. Like, perspective, I beg. I think if you're trans, you have to really turn your back on the notion of natural. I think it's just, you know, it's kind of just, you know.
I saw a tweet the other day that was like, the vaccine's not putting the microchips in, it's taking them out. And I was like, oh my God, I'm logging off the internet for today.
We're finished.
Shall we go to Carrie?
Not even gotten to Carrie yet. But it's fine because, like I said, everything about this episode really comes back to Steve's testicles. So meanwhile, in other testicle news, we have Big versus Aiden. Batman versus the Green Hornet, which is a reference I understand because I defy gender stereotypes. You know, I love comic books. And Kato is the little sidekick, Pete. I was powerfully sexually attracted to Aiden in his checkered shirt with no sleeves.
Yes.
Powerful sexual attraction.
Yes. Leaning against the, I don't know, the banister.
And also when he tries to get Carrie to grab his balls. What's wrong with me? Why do I want to grab John Corbett's balls? Or is that really normal? I don't know. There's a question for our listeners. Did you want to grab his tighty whities?
I was
well?
Thinking a quick aside on that note when they were talking about like balls, the four ladies. I personally am not remotely interested in balls.
No,
like they're not attractive to me.
I don't entirely agree with. I think was it Samantha who was saying that men are always trying to like attract your attention to balls.
Are they?
Do you know, Lang, on this podcast, if I scroll back through my sexual Rolodex far enough, there is always a story. And once upon a time, when I was living in Kemp Town, I'm going to say like 2006. So obviously I was minus 4 years old. I went out with this guy, and I'm not going to say his name because he had a very distinctive and unusual name. But I think he'd done something to his balls. Like, you know, like that whole filling them up with saline and stuff. Like, you know how that's like a thing? Dylan, you must know this is a thing.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before on the podcast.
With that weird criminal case.
Yes, with the cult,
With the cult. Yeah. The cult of the big testicles.
Yeah.
And they were enormous. Like, and his penis sat like a little frog on a very large toadstool. Like Leng and Dylan can see what I'm doing, but it kind of looked like this. Like it was, and the thing is, just because I'm not a terrible person, when a person drops trow and shows me what's living inside their underwear, I try not to pass comment because that's not very polite. However, on this occasion, it would have taken someone far greater than me to not go, wow, your balls are massive, because they really were. But that's it. In all my years, just the one guy. The rest of them, to be honest, not in the slightest bit interested. Sorry, testicles. Soz.
Wow, it sounds like you're describing a solar eclipse, actually, there.
the penis just being swallowed by an enormous. And I said, because I think even in 2006, I was dimly aware that some people were having saline injections into the scrotal sac. And I was kind of like, wow, have you had this enlarged? And he was like, no. And I was like,
interesting.
Are you kidding? Like, or they were possibly very infected. I don't know. But I hope that man, wherever he is well and happy with his enormous testicles.
Yeah.
But no, I think I'm fully with you there. And again, you know, when you've lived as a trans person, I think you realise that. It's funny, in my forthcoming novel, Her Majesty's Royal Coven, available July 2022, there is a line There's a line that I really like where one of the witches says to another witch, we are not of our bodies. And I think that is very true. And the reason I put that line in the book is because, you know, I started my transition 7 or 8 years ago now. And, you know, my body has changed beyond all recognition. You know, from top to toe, my body has changed. But I have never at any stage felt different about who I am or what I feel like or what it is to be Juno. You know, none of that has ever changed. And so that's how I know that we are not our bodies. Though, and I know some people look upon this in a quasi-religious way and think we're talking about souls or spirits. I don't know if it's that deep. Maybe we could just think of it as a consciousness. But, you know, I don't feel any different as a human being to how I felt in 2012 when all this started. And more's the point, I have been loved at every stage since as well. You know, I had lovers pre-transition, I've had lovers post-transition, and it feels like sex is a bodily experience for sure, but it kind of doesn't matter what that body is like, because I've enjoyed sex however my body has been. Does that make sense, Leng? Am I speaking in tongues?
Yeah, no, I think you're, well, tongues, fingers, everything in between.
All very important.
I've always felt that as well, you know, sort of like having, you know, although I've been single now for about 18 months.
That's wild. You're a very handsome man, Leng.
I don't feel it right now, but thank
listeners, if you're listening and you're really, really hot and would like to contact Leng, slide into So I Got to Thinking DMs and we will vet you. And if I think you are worthy of my friend Leng, we will pass you along. There you go, Leng. Say that we don't pay our guests. Truly,
thank you.
Have benefited.
The day that Juno cured Sleepy Hollow. Thank you. But on a more serious note, yeah, I've always felt that, you know, sort of to, you know, when you have sex with someone, it can be quite it's a very connected experience. Sometimes it isn't a connected experience, and that's fine, because, you know, since taking testosterone, which has been about 10 years now, you know, sort of I've realized the difference between that sort of urge for very physical moments that you definitely have, and it definitely has changed how I feel in those situations versus when I'm not. And it's that sort of deep connection thing. And I've also reflected on through my whole life, you know, because I've had quite a few lovers in my time.
The odd one.
You know, it's, you know, but sometimes it's definitely been times where it's been, you know, it's been about the act or what we're doing at that moment. But it's also been about sometimes how our bodies and our chemistry has been together. And actually for that, it stops, to me, I've always stopped thinking about genitalia at that point. It's the connection that we share. And when you have certain dynamics, just like when, you know, it's very different to having that sort of very, you know, having that really sort of hot tryst versus when you're having sex with someone where you really love each other and you're emotionally exchanging at the same time. You know, there's so many layers to
well
it.
As we learned a couple of weeks ago, Carrie can only orgasm if she's really in love with someone. She might want to get that looked at.
Yeah. I agree. You know, just like I still think the biggest letdown I ever had for Sex in the City all along was the fact with this whole, when the final big reveal of Mr. Big's name came about, this for all the time it's like Big and whatever, and then on the phone it's like John in that really horrible font.
The Nokia font.
I was just like, oh. So, you know, so it's like Big, and I was like, I wasn't expecting, like, you know, something, but I was just like, John. Great. You know, like, you had John. You know,
speaking of Big, he was so good in this episode, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Chris knows.
I love boozy, chain smoking Big was such a mood. Can get her, but she can never get me. No, what was it?
I love that he also kept fixating on her and stuff. And the big thing that I noticed of that, actually, because I was really, you know, sort of, well, I watched all of it, you know, this afternoon, and I was just like, wow, you know, sort of like recapping a bit. But the thing that I found really interesting was just how, again, with Aidan, just how insensitive she is to his feelings. Because that flyaway comment of, like, you know, when he's like, well, why does he want to come up here? Understandably, it's like, you cheated on Big with him. He's now coming up here. And the way she's like, oh, haven't you ever had your heart broken? And then it was like, oh. But it's, and also, previously, when she wanted to get back from him, when she kept saying to him, you must forgive me, she wasn't really taking any accountability of, I've really made a big mistake, whatever. She was just like, I just don't want you to hate me. You must forgive me, sort of thing. And I was like, wow, you know, because it was quite interesting, because I do see guys, again, interesting about this masculinity point, guys that are perceived as softer, if they do assert themselves sometimes, it's like, you know, there's always going to be the bad boys as such, and it seems that they can do whatever. But if you're the softer guy in situation, it's like, well, you know, you have to forgive me, and it should be okay, or you should legitimize what I've just done to you, because, well, you know, you're not the bad boy. So because of that, I'm going to just save all my sort of feeling bad about anything or accountability for bad boys. But if it's you, it's fair game. And I just don't, I've never quite understood that dynamic, but I find it quite fascinating to observe.
Mm. Alexandra Burke has a lot to say about bad boys. She says, oh, the yes, bad like guys song, are always catching my eye. So it's just, it's that, that's what it's about. I suppose we should briefly talk about Trey's sperm. Well done. We mentioned it. It's been mentioned.
I liked the fact that they ordered Chinese takeaway and put it on a silver tray in their dining room. I appreciate it.
And I love how he got really upset. I forgot what he said though. Was it his mooshu?
It's his mooshu. He doesn't want a side of sperm with his mooshu.
That was it. And I was thinking, is this a code word or something? It was just like, you've ruined my mooshu. And I was just like, wow, so this is what people said before Farrah and Ball went on their walk. You know, it's like that kind of moment of, you know, not before my mooshu.
Yeah. You know, like, so much.
Oh, poor Charlotte. You know, there are so many red flags. His total reluctance to engage with their fertility treatment is very red flaggy to me. And it's always Charlotte doing all the work. And maybe that's the most troubling thing about Trey's masculinity. It's not that he can't get it up. It's not that he is reluctant to give a sperm sample. It's that he makes Charlotte work so hard for their relationship. And I know maybe I always feel like a Pollyanna, but, you know, I always just think the right relationship shouldn't feel like an ordeal. And I think later on in season 6, we will get to Samantha's amazing rule for relationships, which is it making you do this? Big smiley face. Or is it making you do this? Horrible frowny face. And I still think that is the single best litmus test for a relationship. And it just strikes me that Charlotte and Trey's relationship is just continually hard work. And she does indeed have to hold up jugs. Although, actually, no, in the end, it's not the jugs that arouses him. She gives him a handy in a doctor's office.
Yeah, and she talks about like whipping up his sperm, which
his Scottish sperm.
Unsure about
his strong Scottish sperm.
And the double emphasis of, you know, there was absolutely nothing wrong with his sperm, and you know, and also just the shitty attitude that. And I know that obviously with fertility things, this must be attention for people. Mm. And obviously, I'm never going to have that conversation with anyone, you know, sort of, or even want to have kids, you know, sort of. But it's sort of, you know, sort of that it's interesting, that whole, like, it's the blame thing straight away of, like, you know, who hasn't got this perfect virile body, you know? It's like, and, you know, and I think, well, our relationships are with this heteronormative gaze, is it always this obsession about how you're going to produce children and how you're going to do things? Because, you know, looking at it now with a different context, or looking at things with a 2021 lens, well, not everyone wants to have kids now, actually, you know, and like, it's sort of, and it's really weird that when that was first shot, you know, looking at the time scales for there, it was like that classic relationship elevator, you know, at a certain age, it's expected you meet someone, you get married, you have kids, you do this, or you reach a certain point in your career, when in fact, as we know, things are very different. And it's the other thing that's quite hilarious is how many relationships that follow that model, which is sort of what's drilled into us, is that's how you live life. Mm. They all fail. You know, look at divorce stats, look at who's together and who's not, or this overachieving thing, when in fact, people, rather than cheating, you know, it's funny how people that have open relationships or non-monogamous setups or things like that are looked at like charlatans almost. But actually, some of the most honest relationships, and I know from my own experience, that I've had, have had that sort of slight element in there, because it's sort of had that, not that escalator thing, but where you're actually honest about things. And also understanding, you know, that not everyone can fulfill everything. I think in podcast terms, Esther Perel has actually opened up that world a little bit more for people with having some conversations there. But actually, a vast number of, like, particularly queer people have been doing things like this for years, because we have different types of relationship. Yeah. And the other observation I made just now, which I thought was so funny, was obviously looking at how things have advanced with technology. Because I thought, God, you know, in some ways I was like, why aren't they in a WhatsApp group, you know? Or wow, they're buying things from shops, like, you know, they're not just like having some ongoing, like, you know, like ongoing trail of, you know, like online deliveries. And just this sort of idea of, you know, and I was like, wow, they're not even having a video consultation with the doctor. You know, it's like, it's just really weird how things can change in our lives.
I went shopping on the high street yesterday. It was really weird, but I quite liked it.
Wow.
There, I know. Who can say? Okay, before we go, we must attempt to answer Carrie's nonsense question, which is, oh, fucks, I haven't even mentioned that she compares testicles to handbags.
Oh, yes.
What the fuck?
That bit was just like...
We feel naked without a purse.
Which made me think, wow, are you really trying to speak to trans men here? But she clearly wasn't.
Testicles for men are what purses are for women. It's a little bag, but without it, you'd feel naked in public.
When the writers were writing that, like, what...
Because that's some bullshit. I mean, is she really saying that to be a woman you have to be carrying a Fendi around with you or something? That is so deranged. It's lines like that that made this show very easy to attack from a feminist standpoint.
It's offendive.
Yeah. Like, you can see why people ridiculed it.
Yeah, like, also, like, any reasonable person watching that would be like, what the fuck is she talking about?
And also, Carrie, I mean, come on. If you are a cisgender man who wants to have babies, then the scrotal sac does have another function, whereas a purse is just for carrying your things. You know, they're very different, Carrie. Maybe this is why she and Big never have babies. Maybe she just fundamentally doesn't understand reproduction.
And, you know, the other observation I've made of all the Sex in the City is obviously, like you both, you've all watched them all. Have you noticed how... Everyone else, you see them sort of actively engaging in some sort of sex scene, but with Carrie, never.
Yeah.
Oh, that once
very
or
seldom.
Twice. You see a bit of a, yeah. There's a bit of a sheet over. Yeah, and maybe it's in the contract.
She literally did have
really
it in her contract. Yeah, she did have a special contract with no.
I did find it funny, especially season one. You see Charlotte getting quite a lot of encounters situations when she's meant to be like Little Miss. I follow the rules. I'm a Ivy based wasp. Mm. You know, whatever sort of category. But with Carrie, who would be the one talking about it the most, I was just like, wow, you really are.
It's
all mouth.
It's
and
funny.
Lots
this is
attendees.
It's funny. This has been a recurring theme with our guests. With people being like,
that's the words to the theme tune. So as everybody knows, the words to the theme tune are: she wears a bra, a visible bra. She wears a bra, a visible bra. For sleep, for sex, for sleep. And then on and on. And that's the theme tune.
She never takes her bra off.
She never, you will always, never going to see Sarah Jessica Parker's nipple. And that's fine. That's her choice. So to answer Carrie's question, are men women with balls? No.
...
No, Carrie.
...
Because for the sheer reason that we've established today, which is that a pair of testicles says nothing about anyone's masculinity or femininity or anything, because in the words of Juno Dawson's Her Majesty's Royal Coven, we are not solely of our bodies. There we go. Lang, thank you so much for coming on So I Got to Thinking. It's been so lovely having you on. Thank you for sharing your insights with us.
Anytime. Thank you for having me. And it's been lovely to chat with you both tonight.
Will you come back another time?
Happily. And if we get to have a session where we can even record it in person, I love cooking and making cookies. I will bring you some cookies.
Because
Nigella Lawson herself praised them on Twitter a while ago, and I nearly died. Like,
wow.
I nearly did.
It was, Lang.
I was also the first ever trans contestant on MasterChef a few years ago.
He was indeed. That's Lang's other claimed fame.
That's
he was
amazing.
The first ever trans contestant. But Lang, do you think you could make one large cookie that says "I love you" on it?
Like Miranda,
like Miranda's cookie.
I could try.
What? So it has to be a cookie the size of a pizza with "I love you" spelled out in chocolate chips. That's all I want in this life.
That's easy. I also made a cake that was a Nigella cake that got some praise a while ago, again on Twitter, where I put "la" because I've been watching It's a Sin a lot. And
oh yeah,
she said it was fabulous, and I was like,
Nigella is doing an evening with Nigella on December the 5th at the South Bank Centre, and she's going to cook on stage and then do a Q&A. and I'm very tempted to buy tickets.
Please do go. I want to send you a spider. I want to know how many creepy men there are in the audience touching themselves surreptitiously.
Maybe a few, yeah.
Please do join us next week when it's one of my very, very favourite episodes of all time. It's Shoulda, Woulda, Coulda. Until then, do follow us on social media at SIGTT Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. Leng, where can we find you on the internet?
I'm just at Leng Monty.
At Leng Monty, there you go, if you want to date Leng. Until next week, stay safe and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.